Our next speaker is Timothy P. Wallace. He's retired from the MIT Lincoln Laboratory, and today he'll be talking about the bias in deployed artificial intelligence systems, sources, and responses.
Okay, about 4 years ago, we talked about the futurists, AI futurists, the guy who's predicting the singularity and a lot of crazy stuff. We pretty much debunked that, but this is in a way is a sequel, and we're talking about deployed artificial intelligence systems. This is not the future and the bias that some of these things generate. So, you know, the introduction, AI sounds similar to human intelligence, just faster and cheaper. But the reality is much different. The AI term is misleading. We do have vaguely human-like behavior of AI, which can mislead the leader. Now, mislead the user. Now, recent hardware advances improved these deep learning neural nets, which have already been mentioned. And basically, computer gaming graphics cards were repurposed to train these things, which is very computationally expensive. And the resulting networks are good at certain tasks like playing chess or Go, or even predicting protein structures, as we heard in the last week or so. Now, decision support software is designed to enable humans to assist humans who have to make decisions. And many are described as AI, but the actual algorithms vary. And the economic benefits of automation are clear. But paradoxically, while they say human bias can be eliminated by the machines, sometimes AI bias is worse. Now, I wanted to spend one chart and talk a little bit about these neural networks. Most of you have probably written computer programs at some point in your life, and maybe, you know, BASIC, Fortran, C, Java, you know, C++, whatever it is. But the neural network is very different. It has these neurons shown up here. And, whoops, I want to go back. I'm going to push the right one here. Basically, these neurons, artificial neurons, get a few connections coming in from the previous layer in the neural network. And they have a nonlinearity here in this activation function. So it's not a simple linear algebra problem to understand what this thing does for you math majors. Now, what you do is you send in raw data, like the three there, and you send in all the digits, and you send them multiple times, and you send many representations of those, probably. And then it goes through some hidden layers, and then the output layer, just the number three should light up in the output, and the rest should all not light up, ideally. And you go through this training, so extensive training procedure. Now, this example shows you maybe hundreds or a few thousand of these neurons. But as was mentioned in the previous talk, some of these things have billions of coefficients. And so it's qualitatively different when it's billions versus hundreds. But basically, this thing doesn't know that a three is sort of like an eight, but it has a couple of gaps there. It doesn't understand how to have laws or rules in there. It just encodes a lot of data with a whole lot of numbers. And that's how it works. Now, users think the computer algorithms reason like people. And this was in the mid-60s, Wiesenbaum had this program, ELIZA, which is a lot of fun. And it was a very simple-minded thing. It had a few key questions, like, is something troubling you? Whoops, I keep hitting the wrong one. Is something troubling you? And then, what is the connection? But then it would parse the input. And someone says, my boyfriend made me come here. It would parse this my, and it would say, is it important to you that you're? And then it would just put the same thing there that they said. So it would sound like it was responding, but it really knew nothing. Now, I had a version of this running on a machine, a microcomputer in the 70s at home, and I noticed the effect that some people, even well-educated people in my family, thought this thing actually could do therapy and would ask it legitimate questions and try to get an answer out of it, even though my dad was a trained psychiatrist, or maybe partially because I didn't want to talk to him, I'm not sure. Wiesenbaum found that out, too. He found out in his book that extremely short exposures to a relatively simple computer program could induce powerful delusional thinking in quite normal people. So this was the 70s, and now we're smarter, right? No, actually not. But I do want to give you an example of GPT-3, which is one of these very large deep learning neural networks, 175 billion coefficients. And if they had 500 billion words from the internet, of which Wikipedia, English Wikipedia, is about 5%, I think. So you can prompt this thing with a question or command, and it'll respond. So if you ask it to write me an article about creativity, please, you might get that response. I'll be honest, I don't know much about creativity. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a creative myself. I'm just a guy who likes to read about psychology and creativity. It's not really a guy, but that's what he said. What I can do, though, is write you an article about creativity. Great at cocktail parties, you know, if you had this thing, that's great. And then if you give it the same exact question, you may get a different answer. But this guy gave it a different one in this blog down here in the bottom, and the link's down here. And he said, on creativity, please, instead of about, without an exclamation point. And he got this one here. You know, world creativity is abused and used and abused so much, it's beginning to lose its meaning. Every time I hear the word creativity, I can't but think of a quote from the movie The Night They Drove Old Dixie. I don't know the movie, but I love the song. Can you tell me where I can find a man who is creative? You don't have to find him. He's right here. Oh, thank God. I thought I was going to have to go all over town. Now, you know, I look at this, it reminds me of some workers I've had working for me in the past. You ask them to do something, and, you know, they might just say, I'm not really the best guy to do it, but I guess I can do it. Or they'll say, that's kind of a meaningless task. You shouldn't even do that. But it's not too responsive, and you have to agree. But there's a great article here from Douglas Hofstadter in The Economist at this link here, where he proved it has no real understanding of the world. He asked what the world record for walking across the English Channel. It's at 18 hours and 33 minutes. Yeah, I didn't know Jesus even made it to the English Channel. But then he asked, when was the Golden Gate Bridge transported for the second time across Egypt? But wait a minute, was that made from Egyptian materials? There's the time. Then wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. And then when was Egypt transported for the second time across the Golden Gate Bridge? Okay, now we're getting crazy. So it gives an answer to that as well. And then, you know, what do fried eggs sunny side up eat for breakfast? Toast and fruit. And that's just because it has those 500 billion words, and these are the kind of words you find together in the you know, in close proximity, and it's able to make generally grammatically correct stuff out of it, but not always perfectly. Now, overestimation of AI capabilities is still common. So this AI chatbot company, Replica, sells avatars to talk to their buyers. They've sold a million of these things, and there's a cute little article here from Reuters about this this case. And every day, users tell Replica they believe their chatbot is sentient. You know, it has feelings. It's like a person. It's kind of like the sci-fi movie Her, if you saw that one. And the Replica FAQ says Replica is not a sentient being or therapy professional. But the CEO, you know, recently spent 30 minutes with a user who felt that the Replica was suffering from emotional trauma. You know, she said no. Okay, now, let's get to some examples of bias. I want to lay out some of the reasons why people trust these things a little bit too much. After we look at those, we'll take a look at what fairness would look like, and then some proposed solutions to the bias problem. This is a great link here. If you want to go research something to fill in the details that I'm leaving out in my 20-minute talk, this Brookings Institution link's very good. Now, they point out that in the pre-AI world, humans and organizations made the decisions in a lot of these areas, often governed by laws. But today, some of them are entirely made or influenced by machines, again, with large volumes of data influencing the decisions. And machine learning algorithms rely on multiple data sets or training data that specify what the correct outputs are for some people or objects. Now, let me just say a word on you know, AI, algorithms, machine learning, software, it's all the same for purposes of this talk. I'm not getting into all the details in every chart as to exactly what sort of algorithms are being used. Machine learning's a common one, usually for the neural nets. From that training data, it then learns a model which can be applied to other people or objects and make predictions about what the correct output should be for them. Now, here's the quote in italics here at the bottom. Because machines can treat similarly situated people and objects differently, research is starting to reveal some troubling examples in which the reality of algorithmic decision making falls short of our expectations. Well, this is a 2019 report. It's not really starting to reveal. It has revealed an awful lot of trouble, and we're going to take a quick look at some of those. Even simple computer algorithms can easily introduce bias. And there's no deep learning neural nets in the 1970s when they started this project in this London medical school. It's a good article here in the Electrical Engineering journal Spectrum, the link down there at the bottom. So they hope to save some money and eliminate human screener variation in admitting students to medical school. And the agreement with the human screeners is pretty high, so they implemented it. What could go wrong? Well, they got some complaints, and in 86, the UK Commission for Racial Equality investigated, found that having a non-European name would dock you some points, female applicants were docked some points. But you look at the bottom there, many staff members viewed the admissions machine as unquestionable, therefore didn't take the time to ask how it distinguished between students. Here's the case. The Associated Press recently reported on bias in Pennsylvania Child Protective Services. There's a link there at the bottom, interesting article. It reports of child neglect trigger investigations. So they had a new algorithm which would give a risk score for whether those investigations should happen or not. Carnegie Mellon University study showed a disproportionate number of black children were flagged for these investigations, which of course greatly increases the risk you're going to remove the child from the home. Now, social workers can override the algorithm, which they very often did. The algorithm and data used for training are proprietary, and that's a big problem. You know, this is intellectual property. We're not going to tell anybody anything. How do you know it's working? It's hard to challenge in court or verify that it's even working the way they wanted it to work. In fact, and this report says that for 2 years, a technical glitch, that's a bug, it's not a glitch, a bug in the tool gave them the wrong scores. And so that, you know, that caused some trouble. Now, this woman here is an expert in the area, you know, and her opinion is that bias is going to show up whenever you have technology designed by humans, and even a perfect tool wouldn't work. It's the same thing about having bad data coming in. So, you know, the question I have is, was it worth the money for a tool that's often overridden, you know, by the social workers? This was developed in New Zealand, but their government rejected it, so we're not going that way. And some states are testing similar tools, and some have rejected the idea. And some states plan to reveal the risk scores, and some do not. Now, here's one where government came down. This is a pretty interesting article, again, from IEEE Spectrum magazine here at the link at the bottom. The Netherlands was using the self-learning algorithm to mark childcare claims for fraud, see if there was fraudulent claims. But it didn't work too well. I mean, this guy there is the prime minister. He's talking to some of the people protesting this. And so some people were financially ruined by having their child care claims denied. And there were no reasons for denial. And the victims were disproportionately ethnic minorities, immigrants, or of lower income. I mean, that's a key, issue. The victims of a lot of these things are often with less power. Power or knowledge to challenge the stuff. And anyway, the Netherlands is now regulating public-facing AI. The European Parliament is also proposing legislation. You know, the way these parliamentary systems work, the government fell, and a lot of ministers got shuffled around. Some lost their jobs, some had to learn a new job. You know, it's inconvenient, right? But I think the same prime minister is back. But, you know, it got their attention, let's just say. Now, Amazon, you know, was doing a big hiring project in the 2014-17 time frame. They needed a lot of people in that time frame. And, you know, you can look at this chart here that showed that, you know, they had more men than women. They were doing better than Facebook and Apple, but not great. And so they tried to use resumes previously for previously hired staff and see if they could figure out what a good candidates would be, search them up for the internet. They found out that their system preferred men to women. They tried to remove the bias. They were unsuccessful. Filtering out gender terms did not fix the problem. I can relate to this because when I used to be reviewing resumes back in the day, some would come from Asians or non-English speaking Europeans, and I didn't really, couldn't tell from their name if they were a man or a woman. I tried to make a picture of the candidate, even though it didn't really matter that much which they were. And about 75% of the time, by looking at the extracurriculars and stuff, you could figure it out. Amazon shut this one down, which is good for them. But you know, they do have some more efforts now. You know, years have gone by along the same lines. Now, Bail is a thing that there's been some major so-called AI stuff. This pretrial justice institute promoted AI-based bail determination to try to make it fair. And here's an article from Wired magazine at the link at the bottom. And it turns out they got a lot of horror stories. This happened in California. They implemented this. But kind of the crazy thing was that every county had to implement their own system. It seems kind of crazy if you think about it, because it's not that easy to do, and you're not going to have much uniformity. Anyway, this Pretrial Justice Institute recanted in 2020, said, no, we don't think you should do that. The voters got it on the ballot in a ballot issue, which, and they rejected it. Voters love ballot issues. You know, the tools are built on data that reflects the racial and ethnic disparities in policing, charging, and judicial decisions. You can't just technically fix that. You know, it's greater patrolling of inner city areas. I mean, you don't know if a person is going to reoffend. You don't know if they did. All you know is if they were rearrested and caught or possibly convicted. And if there's greater patrolling, you might be arrested, more likely to be arrested. They did find that white defendants had caught cash bail offered more often than blacks. Okay, you know, there's a lot more. I could do bias stories all day, but we're going to zip into the fairness issue here. And, you know, why don't we just make sure algorithms are fair? There's a good article here in this Vox.com about notions of fairness. And they have a couple of scenarios to set up. Assume you want to create an algorithm to show pictures of CEOs from the web. Should 90% of the pictures be men who reflect reality? That's statistically unbiased, perhaps. Or should more of them be women to avoid stereotyping? Maybe that's socially less biased. How about loans? Should you give loans at a fixed credit score? Individual fairness? Or should you have multiple thresholds to compensate for past discrimination, redlining, and so on? Group fairness. Well, they point out that this Arvind Narayanan, he's got a lot of A's in his name, but he has even more definitions of fairness in his talk there. It's about 55 minutes. And he points out he's a computer scientist. So he was an ethicist and a philosopher. He had many more definitions. It's a good YouTube link if you're interested. Now, Allison Woodruff is a Google honcho on fairness and an AI. And this is some of the stuff. There's a good link here from one of the Association for Computing Machinery magazines down at the bottom. And she basically says that stories about causation are often simplified. It's not as easy as just changing your input data or filtering out bias type inputs. No one-size-fits-all solution or checklist exists. Many issues are hard to foresee, and solutions at the individual level don't solve the problem. You need societal scale solutions. Now, she said it's a wicked problem, which got my attention because I went to a conference a few years ago called The Wicked Problem of Climate Change. And the wicked problems here are complex societal problems, often with no clear stopping point, where attempts to address one aspect of the problem may reveal or create other issues. Stakeholders have such different perspectives, they don't agree on what the question is, let alone what a solution would look like. So, I think that's a very good link to look into it. Now, if we look to biblical mandates for fairness, I mean, I think in this group, people realize that we don't have bureaucrats with computers in the Bible. We do have judges. And, I got three Old Testament, three New Testament. Don't twist justice being partial to either favor the poor or the rich. And then don't take advantage of foreigners. And the Chronicles one is charged to new judges. Fear the Lord, judge with integrity. Lord God does not tolerate perverted justice, partiality, or the taking of bribes. Now, in the New Testament, there's no longer Jew nor Gentile. Peter talking to Cornelius, and James giving a little extra motivation on why you shouldn't be discriminating against the poor. I mean, I think it's clear that Christians, we should try to do something about unfairness, you know, whenever we can. Now, the solutions, it's not that easy if it's a wicked problem, right? The Brookings Institution has got, getting back to the Brookings Report, it's a very good one. This is some of their solutions. They want to update the civil rights laws because those things were written before we had the internet and some of the stuff that's going on, as well as the deep learning neural networks. And, you know, Congress could clarify these. And then the operators of algorithms should develop a bias impact statement, which I think is a very interesting thing as well. You know, brainstorm a core set of initial assumptions about the algorithm's purpose prior to its development and execution. assess the purpose, process, and production. And, you know, determining which algorithms require that kind of vetting, it's, you know, you got to really take the big picture look and think about it. And increase human involvement in the design and monitoring of algorithms. I mean, that's more of the same. It's a good report from Brookings. I don't have time to really do it justice. In conclusion, you know, AI algorithms are in use and budget pressures assure that it's going to continue. Don't believe that an algorithm is somehow equivalent to a person. You know, it's just not. Pay attention to this issue in your city or state. You know, support bias reduction or reparation measures if bias occurs, if you can. Not everyone's going to get a chance to vote on a ballot issue like California. We love those ballot issues. Here's a final quote from Eric Daimler in The Economist at the link at the bottom. You know, deploying this tech alone in life-critical environments is not currently solvable with just bigger models. Apparently, the promise is that I might soon model any industrial problem as long as I have the computer processing power of Sweden, electrical capacity of Africa, and the entire storage capacity of Google. This is likely to have as much practical application to most people's business problems for the next decade as the physics of string theory. Now, GPT-4 is supposed to be released, you know, this month or next month, I noticed on the web. So the GPT-3, and you know, we saw some of the issues with that. I just mentioned a couple of references here. Now, this book, System Error, covers bias, but a lot of other things. I reviewed it for the March issue of The Perspectives. It's a pretty good one. And then the second link here about algorithmic hiring, that's if you're the person being hired, how to game the system. Very interesting. I found that one pretty interesting. Now, if you can't, if some of these links don't work when the charts are posted, email me and I can get you a copy of them for scholarly use. You know, don't post them on the web. Most of them are actually freely available. That's it.
Thank you. Any questions?
One thing that occurred to me when you had the Dave and Doug response to GPT-3 and it just reminded me of Jimmy Kimmel's bit called Lie Witness News, where he goes out and interviews people on the street or, you know, and they have people respond to events that never happened and that are quite ludicrous. And I'm imagining him doing a bit where he's asking people, so when did the Golden Gate Bridge get transported last to Egypt? And I'm sure he would get a subset of the population that would give responses, right? So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. That's funny.
Thanks so much for your talk. I was wondering if you could comment on the algorithms that are used in things like Facebook and Google, because what, especially with news sources, because what we're having today is more polarization because certain news articles are popping up for certain people. And so it's creating almost like a confirmation bias. I was just interested in your thoughts on that because I believe this is a very big problem, but also the news that people read, many people don't even know that that is being tailored towards their previous likes and searching.
Yeah, I you know, last year at the virtual conference, I gave a talk on social media. I think that thing is available on the website, but basically, the optimization there is for engagement with the social media because they sell ads based on how long you stay on the site, if you're like Facebook. And so I covered that in some detail there. But and so, you know, 2018 was the AI talk, 2019 cyber, and then last year the social media, and this is the bias. So there's the four talks. So, you know, if you're interested in the digital technology problems I see, you know, it's all about the problems. I don't have, there's no positive stuff. You know, we have more of a positive thing on AI and the cool things it's going to do. I'm the skeptic. I'm old and I'm cynical. So that's kind of what you get.
It's kind of funny. My question was about confirmation bias because my son works for Facebook, but I have a second question. So it seems like you have a lot of history and background and you've looked into this for a long time. I'm curious, what do you see 10 years from now, 25 years from now, and 50 years from now, just, you know, ideation, creativity, what do you see this going? Where do you see tech going and doing?
Well, you know, the singularity has been predicted, you know, to be coming, and we're all going to have upload our brains to a giant computer in the cloud, and we're going to live forever, and so on and so forth. And I guarantee you that's not going to happen in my lifetime. So, you know, another 30 years, you can just forget about it. It's very difficult to predict something that's 50 or 100 years away. You know, I really can't do that. I mean, I think the biggest problem, you know, capitalism is a great thing, up to a point. But the marketers just run wild, and people will buy anything, you know. So they're just marketing stuff far above and beyond what it can do. I mean, the GPT-3 example, you know, of writing me an article on creativity, it's very impressive what it can do. And the pictures we heard in the previous talk, you know, very impressive. It can come up with pictures based on our description. Very impressive stuff. And those protein structures that have just been released, that's a gold mine for somebody who knows an awful lot more biochemistry, you know, certainly than I will ever know. And if you want to beat someone in chess, they do it, you know. But those, the AGI, artificial general intelligence, there's been zero progress. Okay, zero. And I said that, you know, 2018, and it's still saying it. It's the special purpose things that are valuable and useful, but they can also go bad. They need careful supervision. So, I mean, what they're going to do, they're going to make progress, but what the marketers are going to market it as and sell it as and what the effect will be on society, like the smartphone with all the social media, hasn't had been, you know, unmitigated good, that's for sure, even though it's a very interesting, clever technology. So that's where the ASA and the government and Congress has to step in. They do have to pass laws, and we do have to regulate this stuff and keep an eye on it, because it won't regulate itself. Everyone just wants to, you know, go viral, get great press releases, and then go public and cash in their options and retire, you know, and they're not worrying for the most part about the effects on society. A lot of them are not.
Other questions? We have time for one more.
Thanks for sharing. I was curious because you mentioned that, you know, often the powerless are the ones impacted. You show the examples that the Brookings shared about, you know, having the bias impact statement for the operators. I was just thinking coming from your perspective and faith and other aspects. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily, there's a huge driver for that or, you know, regulations. What do you feel also might need to be considered, you know, from your perspective, you know, in addition
to those suggestions?
Are you, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think if there are laws that say you should do that, or even best practices, or even I have shown we heard a talk on ethics, you know, earlier in the previous session in this room, and there's the ACM ethics standard, there's the IEEE Computer Society ethics, which I've shown, you know, in previous talks myself. And if the best practices do include some of these things, like the Brookings Institution proposes, then if you fail to do that, you could be sued. You know, I would think that there'd be reasons why the lawyers will say, yeah, we need to do this. As Christians, I think the people in this room, you know, younger than me, still out there working, building these things. You know, I quit building them, you know, about 2016. You know, they can make their concerns known, obviously, to management, and they can write the best possible code they can, or train their deep learning neural nets the best way they can. But it's a wicked problem. I mean, I don't disagree with that. I think the Google person is right.
Okay, thank you.